Read some books and get a little smarter, or maybe not, but still have some fun with us. Put down your TikTok, crack open a spine or two. Long-form discussions with Gabe, Matt, and Paul for you. Come put your feet up, sit down by the fire. Let's chill for a while. It's book time, let's talk about books.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Hello. Long time no see. Hello.
So sorry.
We made a lot of big promises in the New Year's episode, and we've fallen short immediately.
Yep.
Well,
at this rate, we'll have 3-4 podcasts done this year.
No. We're back. We're so back, dude. It's summer now. I'm fucking back, bro. I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm up. And I'm ready to
Matt's
talk.
Matt's already read the next like 4 books.
Really? He's also frozen. This is frozen. Great. Great way to start.
Idiot. He's back. I was just saying, Matt, you already read like the next 4 books.
I'm on the 4th, yeah. I'm trying to
I thought you said you had no
curve.
Time to read.
I don't.
They're short. We got some short ones coming up.
Yeah, the next two after this are quite short. This one's short too. It's just dense. Yeah,
it's the worst book I've ever read.
Dude, how did I know it?
This is the worst book I've ever read in my life.
How did I know Paul wasn't gonna like this book, dude?
It was so bad. Fuck this book. Eat my burrito.
We're so back, dude.
I honestly I was hoping for this, so that's
good. Oh, thanks. Yeah. I want
anyway,
to eat my burrito so bad.
Eat it, dude. Just have some fucking burrito. We're just chilling. Anyway, yeah. Just dear listeners, you know, sorry. It's been a minute. We can tell you about our lives, give you the whole sob story, but that's not what you care about. What you care about is...
Well, we should give them some explanation, right?
Well, Matt has a fucking kid. That's
yeah,
the
I know.
Problem right there. No, and Paul's depressed.
And Paul's depressed.
I'm incredibly depressed. I don't answer texts from my friends, including Matt and Gabe.
That's true. That's
for weeks on end. And I see them and I think about responding and I'm like, no, too depressed. Not going to respond to a simple text.
So there you go.
But
so there you
I'm
go.
Here.
And I was busy. I had a busy semester, man, you know?
Yeah. These the kids, torch of knowledge needs to be passed along to the next generation.
They got to fucking learn, dude.
Yeah.
That's it. So, but
that
I'm
takes
done with
focus.
That. I'm all done with that now. I'm retired for the summer and I'm ready to fucking read and talk about books at a brisk
alarming
clip.
Pace.
At a brisk clip. I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah. Now Gabe's going to go into blitzkrieg mode with the books and then it's going to be annoying because he's going to be like 10 did. Up.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get back on our schedule and we're going to do it this summer, dude. I'm ready to fucking go.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I have
today.
To move this summer.
Oh, right.
Oh,
and
yeah. That's
my
right.
dad's moving as well.
Wow.
So it might be a little busy. And the summer season is the busy season for me. So, but we'll see. So.
Long story short, we're going to make it happen for you,
yeah.
the listener.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah. We just need you guys to really like understand and be impressed with the titanic effort that we're putting in.
Yeah.
And all of our very difficult. Lives.
Our hard lives.
Sympathy.
Yeah.
I'm all about the pity party.
I got some stuff. I still got a backlog of stuff I can do. I should do for the Patreon. Patreon.com/spinecrackers. If you like the show, and want to express your faith that we can continue doing it at a good clip, you can go to patreon.com/spinecrackers. Matt just put a video up there like a week ago.
Yeah, I'm doing my part.
Yeah, I'm doing my part. Yeah. So yeah, that's that. And I don't know what else is new. Anything?
No, this novel.
All right. Yeah, we gotta.
No, it's not. It's old. It's old and bad.
It's not new. That's true. But we are coming back with a bit of it with a heater. And I would say, and as you've already, the attentive listener may have already figured out, a controversial novel. A novel that perhaps isn't all for everybody.
It's not for everybody.
No.
And
including
just
me,
just eating
not
a burrito. No.
I know, Matt, you said that you don't care about food. I hate when people eat, but I'm starving.
On podcasts? Yeah, you do.
If anything, I kind of like it in a perverse way.
I mean, there's a lot of people who get off on it, right? It's like the eating ASMR is like a huge thing.
Mukbang.
Yeah, mukbang. It makes
ASMR,
me want to puke when I hear it.
Yeah, and I don't watch it. I can't. That I find it to be...
It's revolting,
like,
actually.
Borderline morally objectionable.
Yeah, when I hear ASMR videos, I'm like, do I have autism? Because I can't stand it.
Well, yeah. Some people hate it.
Yeah, but a little bit re.
Mukbang specifically, like it just makes it, stuff like that just makes me want to go like fascist. I'm just like, ban it. It should be illegal.
Yeah, just look at Nick Acato Avocado and just be like,
obviously the most egregious example.
Well, you know, listen, top shelf example. I think.
No,
you
I know. That's what
it's
I'm saying.
My it's fork like... in the burrito sauce, and it's all over. I gotta lick it off.
That's okay. Lick the soap. Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. I that's fork licking ASMR.
Yeah, people now are gonna want a visual component. Yeah. They're not getting it.
That was sorry. Sexy. I
we're edging.
Was.
We're edging with Paul's fork sucking.
Yeah. If the secondary purpose for this is goon material.
Oh yeah. this is it. Hey, I'm just gonna say it. I'll go on the record right now if I haven't already. This is a gooner friendly podcast.
Oh yeah,
we welcome gooners with open mm-hmm. arms.
However, the ears get exposed to the sounds of our voices is not our business.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever really. Circles this podcast ends up in, not our business.
Right, and except monetarily, ideally.
Except it does matter, yeah, unless it, you know, hopefully where it should wind up is like, you know, New York
Billionaires.
Best podcast of the year.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, like we said, not our business. Welcome, gooners. welcome, gooners, edgers, et cetera.
Tantric, yeah.
Yeah. Show
if
off
there's anything we can do to get you
comments,
to stay, gooners. Open to suggestions.
Yeah. More. Well, is this book gooner friendly? Is this a gooner book?
No.
I would say no.
Nah, shoot.
Sorry.
I was reaching, but.
Yeah.
It could have been. I mean, by the description, I thought it was going to be a gooner book.
A little more goonery. It is a book about sex and sexuality, though, and mm-hmm. sensuality.
Right. But also the modern predicament.
AKA, oh, should we just tell them what that book is?
It's Nightwood by Juna Barnes, guys. Nope. Nightwood by Juna Barnes.
From what, 1937?
36, 37, something 36, like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Dujuana Barnes.
It is an interesting name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, I
it's annoying. It's an annoying name.
I know another person with that name, actually, but not with the D. It's just a J.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Juno. Wasn't that a movie in the 90s? Or...
Probably. Juno.
Oh, Juno.
Juno, dude.
Juno.
The classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so let's talk about this book. Matt, this was your idea to read it.
Yeah, it was your fucking idea.
Yep. Yeah, Matt, bring it on, the hate.
I think it's pretty confirmed Matt just specifically picks books to agitate Paul.
Yeah, I'm just sniping Paul every time I make a pick here.
The cover reminded me of another of Matt's pick early on. Oh my god, what was it fucking called? It was like the short story collection. Kind of like figure weird line drawings.
What?
I'm not sure what you mean.
I'll never mind. I'll look up
the
list.
Yeah, look it up, though. I'm curious.
We all have the New Directions.
Yeah, New Directions edition with the red
and the cover. The cover is by Alvin Lustig. Good name.
I like the cover. I think he did a good job.
Yeah, me too.
They should have put a Juna Barnes original on the front, though, because apparently she was also an illustrator.
Of course she fucking was.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And a journalist. And a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
She was born an hour north or south of me.
Yeah, Croton on Hudson, baby.
Yeah,
that's a stop on the what's it called?
Metro North.
Metro North. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I always
remember the announcer. Next stop, Croton on Hudson.
Yeah, Croton Harmon. Croutons Harmon.
Stand clear of the closing doors,
please. I always remember that one. Groton. Is it what is the Harmon one?
Croton Harmon.
Croton Harmon, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Next up, Croton Harmon.
Yes, this is my... I'm the reason you had to read it. This is my choice. I chose it because...
Your podcast, your choice, dude.
I don't know. It makes it around in conversation for like one of these like important slash, you know, until recently forgotten modernist texts. I love modernism and that era of writing. It's also supposed to be like this sort of like forgotten piece of quintessential like lesbian fiction, mm-hmm. Which was interesting to me. And, you know, bunch of people who seemed to have good taste were just like, this is really, really good. And yeah, so I was like, let's do it.
The preface written by T.S. Eliot.
That's right. T.S. Eliot was a fan of Juno Barnes early.
A Nightwood enjoyer.
And she was also, you know.
Soul of Wood.
Soul of Wood.
That was yeah.
Jack of Lind.
That book sucked. Mm.
Yeah, it ended up sucking.
But the cover was similar, right?
When I was
like kind of similar.
Yeah, I could see
style.
That little stick. Yeah, I could see that. I get what you're saying now.
The first story still hits, though.
The first one is still really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But everything else is bad.
Yeah, I guess Juno Barnes was like part of that whole expat Parisian coterie of people as well. I believe she knew like Gertrude Stein and like mm-hmm. Joyce and these kind of people. So she's part of that like group and era of writers. Which is just a cool, you know, the most famous time in like Parisian literary history, I would say.
Arguably like world literary history.
Yeah. So just a lot of points for it that I thought would make it a good choice. So I picked it.
Definitely one of those books that I feel like is like I've heard about forever and I never read. And I think probably nobody else reads it. It's just like one of those books that's like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, I get
yeah.
it. Like, lesbian modernism, okay, and no one actually reads it.
Was the like Gaddis thing, like critically praised and seldom listened to, or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Right? Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, thought I'd take a crack at it.
All right, so your second task as chooser is to, and good luck with this one. Explain briefly what the book is about.
Okay, so I read this mad long ago, relative to when we're recording this.
No excuses. Bro.
Yeah, but it's going to be bad because I can't remember the name of the like sort of nymphette like cipher woman that
Robin.
Is like the sort of Robin.
Robin Vote.
Robin Vote.
Yeah, Robin.
So
Vote.
Robin,
you should Robin Vote to the polls.
I'll tell you who's Robin Votes the Trump. yeah. So, yeah, good luck to me. Let's see.
RFK.
Robin is sort of like the central, I don't know how you would describe her. She's not really like a person. Like, she's sort of like a entity slash embodiment of a sort of, like, I don't know, like, an embodiment of the lost soul of like the modern age or something. And she kind of, she, Paul, you're going to give me a rough time this whole
time. Like I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
And she
this
sort
is
of
what the people want. They want Paul hate.
It's
yeah.
true. Well, cause
and
Paul,
you're going to get it.
Here's the thing. Paul has two modes when he hates a book, complete silence for the whole episode or just popping off constantly. And I think the popping off is much more enjoyable to the listener.
Yeah. When I'm silent, it's because I'm slightly embarrassed about not liking the book, but I'm not in that mood. Just, okay.
Yeah. Just a positive confirming dislike.
Fuck yeah.
So yeah, she's sort of like this, what I just described. And she's just sort of like floating through Paris and kind of infecting various other characters in the sort of general area of Paris that she's in, who are at once, you know, there's like a love triangle kind of that occurs where these various people that are very different and emblematic of certain, I guess, cultural trends or like, you know, kind of metaphors or whatever stand-ins for like predominant ideological stances or cultural stances. They all are drawn to her for some reason, but it ultimately ends up kind of ruining their lives.
She's like a fucking, like, she's like this, and she functions this way in the story, I feel like. She's like this fucking, like, black hole of like love and passion, and she sort of just like swirls and sucks these people in, all while being also like invisible to the naked eye. She's not really like in the story in any way.
Yeah, and there's all this talk, you know, she sort of like just floats into random seedy places in the middle of the night in Paris, and multiple other, you know, tons of other people are drawn to her, but just sort of obliquely referenced to. And so, you know, she gets basically into, I can't, again, the names are escaping me, but she basically gets into two main relationships.
We got Nora, we got
Nora Flood, the Nora American, Flood. And her and husband, then, she get at the beginning, she gets married to and Felix, then, I forget Felix's last name, but
Renesis. His,
what?
Felix Renesis.
Is that right?
No, it's from Harry Potter.
I was waiting, like, bro, for that what? Confirmation.
Just trolling already.
Oh, Volkbean. Felix Volkbean.
Right. So she gets into, yeah, which she just sort of passively, she passively just sort of leaves these relationships, or like starts to do really poorly in them.
And she has so, yeah, his child.
She gets married to Felix. She has a kid with him. Then she just kind of like Guido.
Not a slur.
Sickly, sensitive little religious boy. And then she just kind of like detaches slowly from that. She gets involved with Nora Flood after that. And then who is the third? The like, she's like one of my favorite characters too. She's like the,
yeah, what the hell's her name? Jenny.
Jenny, this sort of like serial marriage, failed marriages,
four dead husbands.
Yeah,
which is sus. That's
very,
that
sus.
Is sus.
Very unlucky, or something's going on there.
Yeah, all three of these people, she kind of just ruins slowly, very passively, without seeming to do much. And
Jenny
then there's
Petherbridge.
Yes, and then there's Matthew O'Connor, who seems to be like the counter force to Robin as a character.
And he's sort of like, he also, what's the what's his
grain of salt?
Matthew Mighty Grain of Salt Dante O'Connor. But he also kind of serves as like almost like the narrator of the novel, I think, right? Like he speaks the most in these very, very long, drawn out monologues, which I think make up like the majority of the text of the novel once he enters the story.
Yeah, it's the most annoying part.
He's mansplaining.
Yeah, he's a mansplaining doctor.
Well, I don't know if that's actually the appropriate term, but maybe we'll get
that's
into
true.
That later.
You're right. Yeah, he's actually more complicated than that.
That's right.
And yeah. But anyway, he seems to be the person who is there, like Robin's like this void, like Gabe was describing, of just like seemingly pure instinct and like sort of passive reaction that ends up just confounding all the people she's been in relationships with. Matthew O'Connor seems to be the sort of a expositional or like explicative force, like trying to fill in that void with pure verbiage.
Yes.
Like of suspect coherence, you know,
very suspect coherence,
but he's constantly like theorizing and monologuing and enjoys like the limelight in that way. Although, you know, by the end of the book, he seems rather exhausted by having to kind of like be in the middle point in this love triangle, sort of talking to all three people at once at some point or another, about what it is that happened to them via Robin. So that's sort of my explanation.
I think that was good, dude.
That was good.
Thanks,
I think
homie.
You did a great job, bro. I think we can just jump in, but I think like the other thing that makes this book hard to like summarize in that way is that it's like, you know, in as modernist writing is wont to do, it just kind of, it's very unstructured. It's very sort of like, the chapters are kind of just like these seemingly standalone vignettes that jump around from like jump around in the timeline, and some are before and some are after, and it's all jumbled up. And the places, the location, I lost track of like where things were happening very frequently, because it goes back and forth between like America and Paris and Vienna, mm-hmm. and like I think there's one other prominent location.
Yeah, infuriating. Infuriating and pointless is what I think you're trying to say.
Well, I mean, I think it would definitely
let me just write and be confusing all the time, and it's like you don't even know where you are because I didn't tell you. So it's like it's really hard to know who's talking and like where, what city you're in.
Yeah,
is Judah Barnes here?
Imagine if that's how she—that was her voice.
But yeah, it's certainly something that would be, you know, I could see being frustrating for some readers. It's you know, not that it's certainly not like this linearly structured plot.
Yeah,
we did have chapters. I did like that there were chapters.
It did have chapters, which is titles, yeah. Which is true. Yes,
we could start with Felix. We could just go.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think like you said, Matt, it's sort of all of these people just kind of like get swept into, they cross the Robin event horizon, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
And
they come out of in the hell realm.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Exactly.
They all look like Sam Neill at the end of their experience with her.
See, if that's the way that the book was presented to me, I would have loved it. Because I love
just Event Horizon.
Event Horizon, Sam Neill. But it was just like fucking nonsense. Over, like, especially when it got to the doctor, I was like, I would read a page and be like, nonsense. I was saying that like out loud to myself.
Well,
nonsense.
I mean,
it could be.
This is. I think this is good. This is a good place to start, actually, or to talk about, because it is like the doctor. Anytime he gets up and monologues, it's like, what is this dude cooking? And then ultimately, by the end of it, you're like, he burned it. Something he overcooked. Like, never let this person
cook
again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never get him out of the kitchen. Do not let him cook anymore. Because, you know, and we should probably just talk a little bit more about O'Connor as the character in general, because they're basically, this was my read. I don't know what you guys think. Basically, if we were in 2024, I think O'Connor is trans. I think it's a trans woman, right? Yeah.
It seemed he just pretty much, or she probably rather,
right,
is like just out and says it at some point, talking to, I believe, Nora.
Yeah.
During like probably one of the longest monologues that she has. It's like, but it, yeah, I don't know. It's also strange. Like, it seems implicated in this general sense of O'Connor also wanting to embody the world in some weird way. I feel like it's why, like, he's so jumbled. And I also was kind of right. I don't know if he's supposed to be sort of like a Joyce, loosely analogous Joyce stand-in of some kind. As just
what
like
made you think that?
The mighty grain of salt, like just the heavy criticism and skepticism in Joyce for like a lot of things, and he's Irish, the stream of consciousness sort of monologues that seem to, you know, like could mean a lot or nothing depending on, you know, where you're coming from. And I just wasn't sure, like, as a contemporary, because Ulysses was out already, and I don't know if The Wake was, but
when did Ulysses come out? 18, 20?
20 something.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. I could see that. I could see that. And O'Connor also goes by doctor, but is not a doctor.
No.
But also does perform illegal abortions.
Yes.
Right? And is sort of like this kind of underworld sort of community doctor, it seems like, for like the outcasts and the queer community and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of, like, I don't know what Nightwood exact. It's like,
yeah, the title is, we can maybe talk about, because I have no idea what it means.
But that's the monologue that O'Connor gives, is like the pivotal one and kind of the center of the book.
About
is
night.
Basically, yeah, just, you know,
it's so boring. It's like, oh, night is like day, and like day is turns into night, and like. I was like, what are you talking about? Is that what the point of this book is? This monologue? Yeah. You're right, though. That was like, yeah.
It kind of is the centerpiece, right? This monologue that he gives when, you know, whatever. For the rest of this discussion, I'm going to assume Matthew O'Connor uses any and all pronouns. Okay. So you call him whatever. But it's this scene where Nora, I believe, was, no, Robin. Was it Robin? Who does O'Connor claim to have delivered as a baby? Do you remember that at the beginning?
Was it Robin?
Remember.
I don't remember. It's either Nora or Robin, but
because Nora's an American, so I would just assume it's Robin.
That's true. Yeah, but he's also from San Francisco.
Oh, you're right.
And Nora is from the West Coast, also.
Yeah.
So I think it's Nora.
Yeah.
It is Nora. It is Nora. He says that I helped bring you into the world. So Nora and O'Connor are familiar from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
So she goes to see him to like, this is after Robin has left Nora and gone off with Jenny, and they go to America at some point, and she just kind of like loses track of what where Robin is, and she's trying to find her and write all these letters, and she's all torn up, and so she goes to O'Connor to like talk through it, and O'Connor just pops off. just like absolutely cooks.
Yeah.
And to be fair, she does ask him. She shows up and she's like, I want to know everything you know about Knight.
Yeah, and she asks the question.
And he tells her. He pops off.
Yeah. I mean, there is something like, you know, it is like maybe a date, not dated, but like, it feels like very modernist, you know, to think of this rupture in like the known order of things, and to like therefore have this metaphor of night and day where all of the darker angels of our nature come out and there's all of this hidden chaos underneath. I feel like we, you know, it's a theme that's like old as shit, but
yeah
that feels like it is kind of, if you really wanted to boil it down to something somewhat basic and coherent, it's like,
it's so basic. I mean, at one point he says like night is what, like it's like where like sleep happens and love and sex. I was like, okay, yep, that's nighttime.
Yeah.
Cool.
What was that? Was that how you were gonna boil it, Matt? Overcook it on the stove?
I mean, not, yeah, maybe. It's like, I'm not as like down on it. It's just more like
throw it in the fucking trash, dude. Just throwing it in the trash.
Just there's a flip side to nature, and there's all the stuff that's up in the light that we sort of hold to be the totality of everything, and the book just seems to be like Nora submerges herself. It reminds me of the console or somebody from Under the Volcano or something. Like, you know, you got to go to these seedy fucking places and drink and do drugs and like hook up with like random people.
Which is what Robin is all about. Like Robin's this classic sort of like archetype of like one foot in the high culture, one foot in the seedy underbelly, right?
But always by happenstance. Like she's just kind of got a gravitas towards about her, but it's basically like people that love broken people, and they're like, right. Ooh, she's mentally ill. It's time to, I love her. You
it's
know?
Literally
like,
a I can fix her situation. Yeah,
pretty
you know
much.
I mean?
Yes. Like, wife her up, but, give her a kid. It's not going to work though.
Oh, she doesn't have any fans. I can fix her though.
Yeah. Hey, OnlyFans, welcome. Also welcome here. We love OnlyFans people. I don't.
Gooners take. And goon.
Gooners and goonettes.
Goonettes.
But when Robin is first introduced in the story, I do think she kind of does seek out this the dark night underbelly as well, because when she's first introduced, she's found fucking like passed out drunk in like some shitty hotel by the doctor, right?
Yeah.
By O'Connor.
She's just fully subsumed in it, it seems. Like maybe at some point she wasn't, but like,
and then Felix is like, I can fix her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like this manic pixie drunkard that he finds. Yeah, and for Felix,
he's got his own shit.
Yeah, he's
Felix has a lot of his own shit going on.
He's kind of like the fail son of a much more of another failed person, right? Like, he's part of like the. He basically seems to me to be like a stand-in for the dying
aristocracy,
and the way it's decayed and it has no standing, and it's just this kind of embarrassing. LARPing at this point for these motherfuckers of like, like he's like Felix is obsessed with this title that he wants to get right of like,
which is and it's literally LARPing for him because it's made up, right? The other thing is like ethnic, Baronin? Right? Because he's Jewish,
right?
And he's like deeply insecure about that, and so he pretends has these pretensions of like Aryan aristocracy, and he has this fake title, and he has paintings in his house of fake relatives that are just like not even he's not related to, and you know,
yeah, and everyone knows it's a sham, but they just like humor him occasionally, and and with like the onset of like World War II like underway, I suppose, like, you know, there's some interesting stuff about like anti-Semitism and how it makes him behave.
Right.
But yeah, that's essentially Felix. A completely fraudulent aristocrat trying to like LARP his way through reality.
He tries to turn Robin into a trad wife.
Yeah.
And it just, it does not work.
He does the classic, give her a bunch of beautiful things and like a big home and a
take
kid.
Take her to museums and shit.
Made her sadder.
Mm-hmm. Did not work. And then she almost kills the kid.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sort of. Like, maybe. There's a scene where Felix walks in on her and she's, like, holding the baby over her head like she's going to fucking yeet it in, out the window. Yeah. But she doesn't.
Yeah.
Little Michael Jackson moment.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, so she leaves shortly after that. That's not the life for her. And then how does Nora find her?
They meet at an opera.
That's right.
I think she meets Nora and Jenny at the opera, as a matter of fact, in separate occasions.
Yeah.
Oh no, she meets Jenny. No. She meets Jenny at the circus. She meets one of them at the opera and one of them at the circus. I don't remember which.
Damn.
I think she meets Nora at the circus when a lion reaches through the cage and tries to attack.
You're right.
And then she meets Jenny later, I believe, at the opera.
So then this is where, like, you know, the, like, lesbian sexuality, like, component finally comes in. But it's so hard to tell where Robin stands in relation to this, you know?
I don't even know if she, yeah.
She's just so, like, take it as it comes that it's not clear if she has any sort of relevant sexuality or, like, if she even gives a shit about any of these people, or if it's just like she gets to like be under a roof fortuitously for a little while until someone else takes an interest. And I think that's basically what she is. She's so passive.
Yes.
Except when she's like willful about needing to like get back out there.
Right.
Then she's kind of like unstoppable.
Yes.
I'm unstoppable.
Yeah, a relationship. She's not a relationship person, it seems.
No.
That's too. Yeah.
Serial. That's too binding.
Yeah.
I feel like Robin, at the very least, like, again, she's pretty opaque, but like, my intuition.
She barely speaks. I think she has like three lines of dialogue in the whole novel. Like, she's just around.
again, I feel like to sort of like her as like this emblem of the current malaise of that era, mm-hmm. I feel like she might see each relationship as like a fraudulent settling on a particular view of reality or something like that. Like, because each of these characters, Felix, Nora, Jenny, they're all wrought pretty specifically. Mm-hmm. Like Jenny in particular is like, I think very hilariously like rendered in like detail yes. as to what her character is.
I was reading something. It might've been the introduction, actually, the Jeanette Winterson introduction, who is also a very good writer. I've read a couple of her, I read a short story collection and in one of her novels. It might've been in the introduction. It might even have been in the Eliot preface, but somewhere one of them was like the specificities and detail with which Jenny, who's like a shitty character, and like super just like emotionally needy and like annoying and, you know, like hysterical and shitty, they were like, this had to have been based on someone that she knew and didn't like.
Because who was Juno Barnes supposedly involved with?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I mean, she was involved with I believe some sort of female writer or artist. It feels too specific and like mean.
Yeah.
I have a segment of Jenny's actually that I think is funny.
Please,
it's
please,
a little
please.
Long, but her walls, her cupboards, her bureau were teeming with secondhand dealings with life. It takes a bold and authentic robber to get firsthand plunder. Someone else's marriage ring was on her finger. The photograph taken of Robin for Nora sat upon her table. The books in her library were other people's selections. She lived among her own things like a visitor to a room kept, quote, exactly as it was when, .. She tiptoed even when she went to draw a bath, nervous and andante. I don't know what that means. She stopped, fluttering and febrile. Before every object in her house, she had no sense of humor or peace or rest. Her own quivering uncertainty made even the objects which she pointed out to the company as my virgin from Palma or the left-hand glove of La Duse recede into a distance of uncertainty so that it was almost impossible for the onlooker to see them at all. When anyone was witty about a contemporary event, she would look perplexed and a little dismayed as if someone had done something that really should not have been done. Therefore, her attention had been narrowed down to listening for faux pas. And there's a ton more about that. But basically, she's like the key is there is like she's sort of like a life looter. Like
yes.
She just like fills herself up with like all the detritus of other people's like phrases or anecdotes or objects.
There's that line. There's that line about
personhood
like
herself.
Right. There's that line. I think it's surely it's around there where you were reading, Matt, where it's like every word she spoke was someone else's word. And if she only had her own vocabulary, it would just be oh and ah.
Like, that's right. Yeah. Kind of brutal stuff. Kind of one of my more like favorite parts of the book was just Jenny's, just the brutal renditions of what Jenny was about.
And she physically attacks Nora in a carriage at one point.
She's
Robin.
So pissed. Yeah. Because Robin is flirting with another woman, basically, in that same carriage. And Jenny's probably the worst of them all, I would say. She's very possessive and fraudulent. Nora seems just kind of genuinely heartbroken.
Yeah.
And Felix is just pathetic, kind
of.
Yeah,
Felix is deeply depressed, sad person.
Yeah.
So there is a theme between who Robin kind of sinks her teeth into.
Seems like it, right?
Robin does, or these people just are like.
It might be the opposite way. They get drawn to her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it seems like that. I mean, seems like she wants that to happen, though. Like she, right? Like if she has some sort of purpose.
Yeah,
maybe she doesn't though, because it's modernism.
I don't know what she wants. I mean, it seems like she just wants to fucking consume people. Like a mindless black hole of happiness.
Well, they keep calling her, like, they keep referencing, like, instinctive, like, animals and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she's, like, less of a human being, almost. She's more of, like, a purely present and reactive force that's otherwise like passive to her environment in a lot of ways.
Well, and that I think invites a conversation about the ending, the final chapter, right? Where Nora or Robin, this is as far as I can tell in the, you know, quote unquote timeline, this is a flashback to when and Jenny went to America for a time. And Nora at this time was also in America on the West Coast, and they go to New York and Robin is bored. And then it sounds like she just like walks to California, like through the wilderness. it's the way Barnes writes it. Like this is like typical, right? And this is probably like exactly the kind of thing that drove Paul up the fucking wall. Like in the last chapter, it's like, okay, they're in New York. Robin's bored. She just leaves and goes into the fucking woods. And then she like winds up out in California somehow. Right. Like it's just like of like
again, on pure like migratory instinct, like an animal or something.
Right.
Yeah. Did she have a Forrest Gump like experience or
right.
like,
maybe
Norris?
That I would be into.
Now Tane, I could get into.
But
then
she
gets bitten by a dog.
Well, she winds up on Nora's property in America, in California, or on the West Coast somewhere. And there's like this old, dilapidated chapel, right? And maybe in the Patreon segment, I think we need to talk about the role of religion in this book, because I think it's actually very important in a lot of ways thematically. But she winds up in this like abandoned chapel on the property, and Nora's dog hears her out there or something, and the dog runs into the chapel, and I think Nora can't get in for some reason, the door's jammed or something, and Robin essentially winds up like on all fours, like barking and like fighting this dog pretty much.
Yes.
And that's basically how the book ends. She collapses and starts crying, and then the dog lies down next to her, and that's like the end of the book.
Yes, that is significant. I nearly forgot about that.
Yeah, in terms of the sort of like animality. Well,
that points to your point about her being less than a human, Matt, and she's like more of an animal. Wow. She actually resorts to barking like a dog, and I feel like, whoa.
But I think it's also even the top shelf analysis here. That's what we do. Deep. Hey, listen, you know, it's maybe it's not always that deep, but I do. I also think though, if you read the scene, it also goes even deeper than that. It's not just she's an animal. She's like this other pure appetitive like force of nature, like a black hole. Because I think also significantly in that scene, the dog is scared of her, right?
Yeah.
The dog like runs away and doesn't want to like, it's like, dude, get away from me. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's who worse wouldn't be? Than being like, an animal.
A dog.
That's what
I'm
saying.
Any dog would be afraid of.
If afraid you were barking at him. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Be weird.
We are the paragon of animals.
Yeah. Apex predator, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when we lose our way back into some sort of weird reactive primal state, it's way scarier than just like a dog. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
No, for real.
Yeah.
It's like when I go beast mode in Overwatch.
Yeah.
Everyone just runs scared.
It's really, everyone runs scared. People just quit out.
Dude, I popped the nanoed Soj ult, and the lobby just fucking cowers like a dog. God,
I was wondering, so tortured, you're shoehorning in of this.
It's like the famous Roadhog voice line. We're all animals.
We're all animals.
From Overwatch.
Yeah, from Overwatch too.
It's also the famous Roadhog voice line. Life is pain. So is death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Of course.
What character are you playing mostly these days?
Me?
Yeah.
Soj.
Do not open the door.
DPS.
Don't open the door.
I would much rather open this door than talk about night poop.
Soj Cass. I'm just playing Soj Cass this season.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
You should start streaming.
We did once. It's fun. Oh. It's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty low key and fun.
I wanted to go back to the night and day monologue briefly again. Just because I think like no, because I wanted you're valid, Paul, and I wanted to validate your point about most of what he says here being nonsense, overly elaborate like points that are ultimately very simple, right? And I think like for me the role of this monologue in the story, which I think gets cashed out as Matt already referenced in O'Connor at the end, sort of just collapsing with exhaustion of having to like deal with these people, is that what O'Connor I think is doing is like he feels like his role is just to talk at these people, right? It doesn't matter what he's saying. He's not trying to like make some deep philosophical point, right? Like what does he say sort of like at one point, I think sort of in the middle of this, he goes, I think I have it highlighted here. Hold on. Yeah. You beat the liver out of a goose to get a pate. You pound the muscles of a man's cardio to get a philosopher, you know? And I think he's just like, he's in this process of being beaten up by these people's like stupid problems and whining. And
yeah,
all he's doing is trying to fill that void, like Matt said, that is created by Robin with, yeah, what is ultimately like meaningless words. But I also think there's something really true about it in the sense that like if you're dealing with someone who's like going through a breakup or heartbreak or, you know, they're like really depressed and won't answer your texts. Sometimes what you do in that situation is you just talk bullshit at them for a couple hours and get them to like chill and forget it some of it a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's what like, he's doing here in an obviously exaggerated, modernist, super elaborate way.
Yeah, kind of exactly right. Yeah. Like, I think it's also just a kind, yeah, like the act of writing in general is exemplified by him, that just dumping words on it, you know, to exhaustion, potentially fruitlessly.
Right.
See, the thing about that, though, is that I called you a couple weeks ago, and you were, like, playing Overwatch the whole time, and I was dumping shit on you, and you were like, dude, maybe you should just go – maybe you should get a therapist.
Dude, I wasn't playing Overwatch.
You seemed distracted.
Well, that's possible, but I don't think I was playing Overwatch.
But what you're saying is the doctor, you should have been dumping shit on me, and you weren't.
Well, I not dumping shit, but like, yeah, okay.
You
well,
weren't maybe... really talking to me. I was a little upset.
Wow, dude, I'm sorry about that.
Gabe,
this is what the people want.
Wow, I mean, listen, dude, I'm trying to hit diamond this season. I got a lot going on, bro. I got a lot going on right now.
We can't always be the mighty grain of salt all the time for each other.
Yeah. Well, that's not the only way to handle, right? Sometimes you just listen. And that's what people need.
That's what you were doing.
Yeah. Well, that's I think that's valid too. I think that's
valid.
No, I'm
kidding. I needed to, yeah.
But then sometimes you have to distract them with talking. So it's just whatever. Yeah.
Which you've done that for me before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember being in Iowa with you after my breakup many years ago.
Yeah.
And you're just talking to me about Pokemon or something.
Yeah. See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I remember that, dude. I remember that.
You're like, look at this one.
I don't even fucking know anything about Pokemon, really.
There's a lot of them now. That's all I know.
Yeah, there's a shitload.
And now there's Pal World.
I know, yeah.
I have a little quote that maybe hits it too. Life, the permission to know death. We were created that the earth might be made sensible for her inhuman taste. And love that the body might be so dear that even the earth should roar with it. Yes. Yes, we who are full to the gorge with misery should look well around, doubting everything seen, done, spoken, precisely because we have a word for it and not its alchemy. So that feels again like, I don't know, like the inadequacy of language also being its, unfortunately, the only... the only tool to reach for also in those yes. moments.
Which is like, it's like the inverse of Beckett, right? Like Beckett just says like the least amount possible.
Right. The minimalist sort of move. Yeah.
And this is the sort of maximalist sort of approach to ultimately the same point, which is the inadequacy of like these words, right? Putting things into language, putting formulas on it. There's another line about that somewhere in here that I think I highlighted about like you, if you've put a formula on something, you've already like failed, right? Like you've already missed the point, which is again, of course, like one of the kind of theses of modernism, right?
Yeah, they're talking around like process and flux as opposed to, you know, you pin something down, the tools you've used to measure it have already vitiated any accuracy, and it's right. already changed the moment you take a snap, that kind of thing. Like, you know, science...
don't tell that to a math book writer.
Well, but this is like this is the whole point of like math? Quantum mechanics, right?
Right. I'm talking kind of about math, actually.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, this was also a period in which science was sort of corroborating cultural and like social worries and like heightening them. Yeah. I mean, I guess we didn't have like, you know, nuclear power quite at this point, but
we were pretty close.
But we were fucking close, and the theories were probably floating around in like higher theoretical circles, and you know, just everything was sort of like coming to a head. It feels like it, you know, sort of in hindsight with World War II, because you've already got one war behind you, which is like the big rupture that sort of didn't cause modernism. I feel like modernism gets tossed around as being anywhere from like 1880 start to like, I feel like the general consensus is like 1900 to like 1940 or 1950. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it gets to be like such a hard thing for people to pin down as to exactly what it means. I know I never really could remember what modernism was for years. But it just feels like, yeah, just that 40, 50 year span from the turn of the century to the middle 20th century of just doubt and questioning caused by war and like trying to like take that into account and like, yeah, a lot of enlightenment stuff.
Give me a break though. I mean, freaking Tolkien fought in World War I and it was like, I'm going to write a book about fucking magical wizards. Get over it. Write a book about fucking wizards. If you believe that, like, if you believe that words just add up to like nothingness, or you know, then why even write a book? Just like, go away. Don't put this book into print. Throw it in
there's
the trash.
An argument for that. Just go monk. Just become a monk.
Yeah, go monk,
dude.
Go monk.
Quietism.
Mode.
Never speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some mathematicians did that. Grothendieck.
Mm-hmm.
He did math for too long, and he did too much math. He mathed too hard, and he was like, no,
I stopped. I'm going to stop doing it.
He put a robe on and he just lived like the countryside for the rest of his life. I quit.
Shout out McCarthy, passenger.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not adding anything together ever again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Taxes. Not doing them.
Not doing them. That involves math. How many tires do I need to change for my car? I don't know. I'm not doing it.
I don't know. It's counting, to at least four, and I don't like it.
I have to make change. Sorry, I don't do math.
It's all fake bullshit. Just give me a product for any amount.
It'll be $6 for your sandwich and soda.
But I
always think about money.
Sorry, I'm not doing it. Can't do it.
Money is just something that we agree to its value. So I always feel like if you just think $1 is $100, then it is if the other party agrees with you. And then you can just buy whatever. Sometimes I think about stuff like that, man.
Dude, that's deep thoughts, dude.
Mm. That is deep. Yeah, inflation.
This is why this should be in Patreon because of how
deep it is.
How deep it is.
You guys can pay us $1 or $100. It doesn't matter. It's all the same.
Yeah. It's the same.
And
that's
we can pretend that your $1 is $100. Or you can pretend that your $100 is $1.
Yeah, exactly. So give
that's
us
preferably.
$1,000.
Preferably.
$10. Anyway. Yeah. But I also think, again, right, Matt, like in this whole milieu of modernism and the stuff that is obviously happening in this book, I think Robin is also the the human equivalent of that, like, destabilizing force, right? Because right. as you said, all these other characters are, you know, caricatures is sounds too harsh and I think is not fair, but like they all represent ways of life, right? The fading yeah. aristocracy. There's a great line O'Connor has at one point where he goes, the last muscle of aristocracy is madness, right? and he's talking about Felix and Felix's, like, you know, ill, unwell son, Guido. So there's
Felix.
Sweet
boy.
Yeah, Guido. I mean, I feel bad
for Guido.
Yeah,
me too.
He got rough, and he's got mommy issues now. He thinks the Virgin Mary is his literal mother because he's never met Robin.
Classic. Yeah.
But you know, then you have Nora, who's this kind of like, not aristocracy, but like bohemian sort of. Runs a salon and dude, why you put okay? I'm not gonna address
could have
that.
Done that
I'm not,
off screen.
I'm not gonna address what's happened on
oh,
that screen.
You can eat a burrito. I'm not.
Keep I can't talking. Believe you Fair. Put it. I just can't Fair believe you point. Put it back in there, dude. That's gross.
Not in on top of.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Zin for everyone's edification.
Zins and
wintergreen.
So Nora is this kind of like bohemian, you know, she has like artists around her. She has a salon and all that shit, you know. And then Jenny is this kind of like, you know, rich widow, right? All of these kind of, you know, but Nora is this kind of like modernism into these breaking into these pre-established categories is like this destabilizing force in all of their senses of identity and self and sexuality. Robin, did I say Nora? When I mean to say Robin, anyway, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
Robin is this destabilizing force for their identities and senses of self and all that, which is like again this metaphor for the larger work modernism as a movement was sort of doing culturally, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, all these people weren't comfortable per se, but they had some sort of at least sense of self and like putative yeah. goal or orienting kind of ideology or worldview that gets corroded. And then they wonder why they even gave a shit or like care so much about Robin in the first place. Because again, she's not, she pointedly never really gets any lines or any, no. She's nothing. She's just like, yeah. Which
is, she's AFK, dude. She's AFK.
She's fucking AFK.
Robin is AFK and Spawn for the entire book.
Yeah, she's AFK until she DCs.
Well, that is kind of a good that is a good DC. A good metaphor though, because
she ruins her team comp.
She rage quits yeah. her relationship and it ruins the team comp, which is modern, which is pre-modernism.
Team comp, which is the agreed upon rules and hierarchies of pre-modernism.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Dude, this is yeah. why are you playing that hero? It doesn't work with our comp, which is
right.
hierarchy and pre-established roles.
We're all playing Rokul and she's mystery heroes.
losing lit listeners left and right.
No, that's actually so true though, dude. That's actually so real.
It is, but like even our own patrons don't even play Overwatch 2.
Gooners and gamers, we need to welcome everybody.
Everyone's welcome here. But yeah, dude, we're roll locked and she's mystery heroes. That's what it is, dude. You never know what you're gonna get. She's all over.
Yeah.
That's
why I like O'Connor, because he does I feel like his incoherence and sort of like impossible to pin down like viewpoint and his mm-hmm. just like constant monologues that just seem to like gesture towards profundity, but just fall short every time, but still feel like maybe the dude's cooking still every yeah, time yeah. he talks, you're always like, maybe he's going to land the ship, is like the kind of creative reaction, the modernist reaction to the force that Robin exudes, which is to be equally evasive in one's kind of stance on things, which is like an exhausting position to hold.
Right.
Like, you know, where you're kind of everything all at once, which I think plays into the fact that, you know, he's potentially trans, or like, because he also talks about reincarnation
Yes.
I was actually, I wrote some note where he's talking about being like a sailor and all this kind of stuff from past lives, about like his dysphoria or something potentially being a symptom of his perceived accumulated reincarnations throughout time.
Yes.
And like, is he sort of like fighting against the concept of like eternal recurrence, which is like a fixed loop, like versus the sort of like the flux, the obliviating flux of constant minute changes that like, you know, become major in like complexity, like that kind of thing. Like, I feel like he is something more than just like a bloviating sort of like buffoon.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, and I think like I think O'Connor serves as the, you know, counterpoint to Robin in the sense that, you know, Robin is nothing and O'Connor is kind of everything. Right. Yeah. O'Connor is, you know, like in terms of gender, sexuality, like this fake profession that he has, and like his background and like how he works with all these different characters with his foot in all of these sorts of different roles, if we're thinking about them that way. So yeah, I think like, you know, Robin is nothing and O'Connor is kind of everything. And we see how those two things play out in their interactions with these other three characters.
Because he writes, at one point he says, "And must I, perchance, like careful writers, guard myself against the conclusions of my readers?" Mm-hmm. Which feels like a pretty direct something Juna slipped in of like, you know, again, it's like, could this, what is she cooking in this book? Like, is it really just this like cry of despair at the state of things? Or is there some sort of path that she's suggesting? But I don't see one personally, but yeah, you know.
Well, I have some thoughts on that, but maybe we got to save those for the Patreon, because we're at an
hour. Yeah, we got to wrap this segment up.
All right. Well, if you want to hear more of our thoughts, I want to talk about a couple things. I want to talk about that, what we just talked about, like what is Barnes after here.
Yeah.
Because I think it has something to do with religion, is my suspicion, because that's a big thing in the book that we didn't really talk on yet.
That's,
and then
true.
I have a few other thoughts about like the queerness of the book and a few other, like how it fits into that history. Okay. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/spinecrackers, $2 a month, as little as that, $2, which in reality, it's like 5 cents, because money doesn't matter, right? It's all made up.
Yeah, it's made up of quantities and yeah.
Patreon.com/spinecrackers. You can hear the full episode, see other videos, you know, all that. And there will be more of the podcast. This is not the last episode for
no.
I was throwing it
out. I was drawing it out because I didn't have a clever "you're a something Harry." Anyone got one?
Oh, you're black hole Harry.
You're a black hole of emotion Harry.
It's like what we do in the shadows. She's like a energy vampire.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you're new to the show, this is the
segment. Kind of like despair from the Sandman universe.
Yeah. Despair and madness mixed into one.
Yeah, delirium.
What is delirium?
Is that,
sorry.
Is that a comic? That's comics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's comics.
Oh, that's comics. Is it Neil Gaiman? Gaiman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Gaiman?
It's Gaiman,
Gaiman,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Gaiman. Gamer. Neil Gaiman.
Who is actually very gay friendly.
And it's in the
actually,
right. I believe it. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the segment of the show called "We Literally Just Read Another Book," which means we are talking about Harry Potter. We get to talk about Harry Potter because we just read another book, and we take the characters.
Did we do words? We're not doing words.
Oh, do you want to do words first? I thought we always did Harry Potter first.
I don't remember. It's been too long.
I think we do words.
All right. Well, let's like do 3 years because I got words.
All right. I'll do mine first.
Oh, I got words, buddy. So this segment is where we find a word from the book that we didn't know or thought was cool and interesting for educational purposes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man.
Mine is Terapus. P-T-E-R-O-P-U-S.
It's like a pterodactyl with 40 pussies.
Terrifying. Terrifying. No, it's a genus of megabat. Largest bats in the world.
Whoa, interesting.
That's nuts, dude. I gotta look that
up. That's weird. And this must have been right around my word, because my word is Petropus, which is also that.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the same thing.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, did someone just write it down wrong? Or is it two different words?
No, I think I looked up Petropus.
Petropus.
And then I got this instead.
Yeah. Oh, so your word was also my word, Petropus.
What's a Petropus?
It's a genus of
the bat?
Vampire bat.
Oh, okay. It's huge.
It's like a flock of them, right? Like a.
Well, it's just huge bat.
Huge bat.
That's sick.
Petropuses.
We got the same word, Matt. That's like hasn't happened for like years.
I know.
What's up, buddy?
That's pretty cool.
All right, Gabe, what's yours?
Okay. There were a few in here, but I'm going to go with. I'll go with Chasubles. Chasubles? I don't know.
Chasubles?
Chasubles. And it's like a monastic kind of garment. It's like in the church. It's sort of like something like a priest or like a priest would wear.
Cassock. Oh, but it's nice. It's fancy.
It's a type of clergy, like a clergy robe.
It's kind of like what the guy in Eyes Wide Shut was wearing.
Yeah.
That's real. I bet Robin would go to that party.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, that was my word. I didn't know that. I didn't know that one.
So would Puff Daddy.
Ooh.
Maybe. Ooh.
Maybe. Well, maybe not his thing.
Drake versus Kendrick, anybody? That's Patreon only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to Harry Potter. Let's put these characters in their Harry Potter houses based on what we know about them.
Felix Puff, Nora Puff.
Felix. Felix is
Slytherin? I think he's Slytherin.
You think he's Slytherin?
Yeah, because he's obsessed with status, but I mean, he's pathetic.
That's true.
But you can be pathetic. True.
Pathetic Slytherin.
Pathetic Slytherin.
That's a good point. He is obsessed with status.
Yeah.
And he kind of like uses Robin to further his own image of his life. As this,
yeah,
yeah, maybe he's just like, yeah, sad Slytherin.
I like that. I'm going sad, pathetic Slyth.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
For Felix, Nora,
she seems kind of
puff,
yeah, puff,
good puff,
yeah, like
she's
solid,
you know, loyal, maybe even a little obsessive.
Mm. Yeah, she seems like the one person who was like kind of just
but
solid,
good
though.
Yeah, she's good. I think a good person.
Yeah,
she just wanted a nice relationship, and she got a little desperate at the end there.
Yeah.
How old was she?
I think in her 40s.
Yeah, makes more sense. Even more forgivable.
Jenny. Slyth, gotta be right.
Slyth.
Yeah.
She's like a trophy wife, but because she collects trophies of all the people she was with. Yeah, she's weird. Yeah. She's like a mausoleum person.
Really, really creepy. Yeah, I think creepy, weird Slyth.
Mm-hmm. Matt.
O'Connor, the doctor.
Ravenclaw?
I was thinking Ravenclaw.
I'm going to say Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
But also good friend, Puff.
But he's a seeker in a kind of way, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
he's like
yeah.
He likes being involved with people, but he's also talking at them, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe out of a felt necessity, but it seems like he's trying to be as open as possible to the world.
Yeah.
In all these weird ways.
It's a pretty even Claw.
I like Claw.
Yeah, I'm saying Claw.
I go Claw.
Yeah.
White
Claw.
Robin.
Oh, know what Robin is?
What?
What?
She is
Death Eater?
Even worse than that. Have you guys seen the Fantastic Beasts movies?
Yeah.
You know that the guy that becomes like the black, like freaking web, and he's like really powerful.
Oh yeah.
What is he called?
I forget what he's called.
She's definitely that though.
I could tell. Yeah, that's real. That's real.
Is that the character that Johnny Depp played?
No.
No.
It's the character that the guy from The Flash played, who like went crazy and like beat up his girlfriend and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, what's his name? Ezra Miller?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he's like, she's like that. Or a Death Eater.
Yeah. Or a Death
Eater. She's like that. Just fumbling around. It's like Ezra Miller, web.
Well, she's weird because she's just fucking weird, man. She is. Like, she's a death web, Death Eater web guy.
Yeah, she's maybe one of the creatures from Harry Potter instead of like an actual wizard.
Yeah.
If you had seen Fantastic Beasts, you knew what I was talking about with Ezra Miller.
I saw it. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, it's a perfect analogy.
It's good.
Is that from the first one? Because that's the only one I saw.
I think. Yeah, it's from the first one.
Yeah, it's in the first one, dude.
Ooh,
anyway,
I don't remember.
Okay.
Ooh,
all right. Well, she's like that. Which means there's only one thing left to do.
Scores.
Scored up out of five.
I did not.
Okay, I'll go first. Matt gets to go last because it's his pick. I really liked it. I think it's a good book. I totally get why it has this reputation. I think there's a lot going on here, historically, contextually, kind of literarily. It definitely would, you know, the writing is certainly dense and like excessive, but not, I don't use excessive in a bad way there. I think it's, the point is the excess in this case, right? For the reasons that we've talked about. I really liked it. I found some of the passages to just be really beautiful and interesting. And there's some really nice kind of like quotes, and the style clicked with me. And I think it's certainly an important book historically. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it I'm going to give it a 4.
You can't do math, dude.
I don't do math anymore. I'm going to give it a 4. I'm going to give it a 4.07.
4.07. Okay. Whoa, okay.
I thought it was really good. I liked it a lot. Very good book. I like this. Okay. I'm kind of closer to Matt. I like this era of writing. I like the style.
Yeah. I'm a little bit farther away from you guys in terms of that era and style. And I didn't like this book at all. I'll put it that way. Thought it was boring, pointless, stupid. Every time I picked it up to read it, I wanted to close my eyes, plug my ears. Wanted to go away and maybe watch an episode of Deep Space Nine or read some Stephen King. Just do something totally different than having to read this book. Never going to think about it ever again. I don't care about the historical nature. I don't give a shit about any of that shit. It was not fun to read. It was really bad and boring. And I hated it. Zero.
Zip. It's the full goose egg, dude.
Zip. Wow. Not a bullshit. Wow. My life sucked reading this book.
It made your life worse.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this right in the trash after we're done.
Wow. Have you given out a zero before?
No. I think so.
What did you give Pilgrim's Progress? That must have been very low.
No, I gave the drunk guy volcano book zero.
No, you didn't, did you?
I think I gave it a zero, yeah.
You didn't like that one either, same deal.
There was always a decimal point, though, until now.
I know, I don't think you've... I think this is your full goose egg, first full goose egg.
I mean, to be real, it's not a zero, but it's funny, so...
It's funny. All right, Paul, you're in the books for a zero, dude.
Okay, I'm going to give it a one.
All right, okay.
It's a huge leap, but yeah.
It's an infinite percent increase.
Yeah.
Not infinite.
Yeah, from zero to any.
I can't think about that. I can't do math.
Math. We don't do math.
Stop trying to get us to do math. Well, what right, Gabe Matt, said up. is sort of my take on it, not to cop out on my own explanation.
You're not copying out, you're just copycatting.
Copycatting, which is fine. It's homage, actually, to you.
Oh, very modernist of you.
Yeah, I'm going to do a Gabe pastiche. No, I liked this book. I found it to be, like, occasionally difficult to read, difficult to follow. But again, I always felt like that was sort of the point with, like, the O'Connor monologues and some of the more, like, opaque and I feel like evasive, what seemed like getting to some sort of point and never arriving at it, that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm a sucker for this era, this style of writing as well. And ultimately found it very interesting. So I was going to give it a 4, even 4.
Hell yeah. Same, almost score.
Man.
Yeah, I found my, like, I was like, even in those moments, kind of like you were saying, Matt, where I was like a little like, what the fuck is going on? Where I'm confused. Where are we? What's happening? I trusted the process. I felt like I was in good hands in terms of like something happening or some point being made. And I personally loved the ending. I thought the ending was fantastic.
Fat.
Fat.
Dude. Phat. Yeah.
Yeah. So
bring it back.
It came together for me in a satisfying way there too. All right, well, that's our scores and our public discussion of Nightwood by Juna Barnes. And if you like it, patreon.com/spinecrackers. If you're from the New York Times, best podcast of 2024 for literature.
Maybe
people.
Literary podcast. Yeah,
best literary
something.
Podcast. Yeah. Yeah. Just
get this in your stupid bad newspaper.
Consider it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not controlled by Pfizer in any way.
Yeah.
Paul, we need to start playing Overwatch again just so you stop watching Joe Rogan.
Not gonna happen.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you after the jump, as they say.
Bye.
We'll see you in like 5 months for the next episode.
See ya, people. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.